All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is January 13th, 2026. Happy Inflation Day. We just got the Consumer Price Index for the month of December, and it was unchanged across the board. 2.7% year-over-year headline inflation, 0.3% month-over-month. We finally did get a month-over-month inflation number. You may recall last month when they finally gave us CPI. After 2 months of no data, there was no month-over-month inflation because we hadn't measured it the prior month. Well, everything's unchanged now. Core, 2.6% year-over-year. That strips out food and energy, unchanged from the prior month. And month-over-month, 0.2%, also unchanged from the prior several months ago because there's this big gap in the data you'll see when you see the chart. Look, guys, there's really not a lot to analyze when it comes to the CPI data. There were some sectors that we'll call out and we'll show you, all right, inflation came down here, it increased over here. And those sectors do kind of make sense with based on some of the macroeconomic headlines that we've seen. I remain highly skeptical of the data. Ever since the government shut down, there's just been a particular funk about the jobs and the inflation data. I can't help but shake that this morning. So we're going to talk about those numbers and what they mean. The market initially celebrated that read. At the very least, this is being viewed as, okay, we're all clear. If you want to cut rates, go ahead and cut rates. But the Fed's like, no, we don't want to cut rates. See also that whole drama from yesterday, which we need not get into once again this morning. But now the market's kind of just trying to find its happy place, not really sure how it wants to react to this one. Another big story going on late yesterday, the story broke. President Trump threatened 25% tariffs on any country doing business with Iran. This was in response to reports of protesters being killed. The numbers are all over the place. I've got one article that says 600. I've got others that say 2,000. Some go as high as 12,000. But we do know the Iranian regime is killing protesters in large numbers here. Something President Trump said, if you do that, we're going to blow up your shit. And they went and did it anyway. No bombs are dropping yet. No missiles are flying yet. I don't know if that's going to happen again or not. I guess they're trying to go the economic route instead, trying to accelerate the collapse of the Iranian currency, which has just been an absolute free fall, which is what led to these protests in the first place. Now, the thing with the Iranian tariffs here on 25% targeting anybody who does business with Iran, there's one country in particular that does a lot of business with Iran, China. They buy almost all of Iran's oil. And we currently have a very uneasy truce with the Chinese in the trade war. Remember the whole, like, we're kicking the can for 90 days and then we're going to have a deal. We don't have a deal. And then we had a deal and then something else flared up. We didn't have a deal, but the deal's back. I think the last I checked, we were like deal on. I'm pretty sure we're still deal on. So what does that mean now? If we do these tariffs on the Iranians or anyone doing business with the Iranians, that's China. Is China just going to sit back and take that and not retaliate? Not really how the Chinese operate. So this story in Iran could escalate either into a hot conflict between the U.S. and Iran for the second time in a year, or it could escalate into further problems in the trade war with the Chinese. We'll just have to see what comes out of this. The story, again, it was just a talking point, was released midday yesterday. Not a lot of details yet. We'll probably get more on that in the days ahead. Now, also going on this morning, the Pentagon is taking a stake in another company, a $1 billion stake in L3Harris's missile production unit. They'll be buying some convertible notes that when this company IPOs, they'll convert into shares of common stock. This is the company that makes the solid rocket motors for all kinds of stuff that goes boom in the U.S. arsenal. The Patriot, THAAD missile, Tomahawk missile, the SM-2, 3, and 6. Those are the interceptors and the anti-ship missiles that are used by the Navy. So once again, we're steaming towards this wartime economy, the government taking stakes in defense contractors. And of course, this is all on the heels of last week when we heard about a $1.5 trillion defense budget proposal for this year. And we also had that big announcement from Trump saying any company that doesn't invest in additional production capacity won't be allowed to pay dividends, won't be allowed to buy back shares, and we're going to cap your executive pay. So government's kind of being very heavy-handed when it comes to the defense contractors. There's your stick, but at the same time, here's $1 billion. There's your carrot. If you want to go ahead and build a factory, that would be great. World is just steaming towards World War III, guys. Once again, the writing is on the wall here. Now, we've got another story going on this morning in Japan. Sanae Takaichi is supposedly about to call for snap elections in Japan. This is very interesting. She's trying to shore up her base of support. She is right now riding on a wave of, I guess, popularity. She seems to be well-received in Japan, and she's trying to do these snap elections in their lower houses and their legislature. I'm not too familiar with the chambers in Japan's government. But this would give her more of a political wiggle room to implement her policy, which is very hawkish defense policy and a very dovish fiscal policy. And so what's the result? You've got Japanese stocks are way up on the news. Japanese bonds are way down on the news. The Japanese currency, the yen, way down on the news. More easy money is what's coming from Japan if this plays out the way most people think it's going to play out. And look, guys, we've got the easy money is rolling in Europe. They got rid of their debt breaks. They're printing money like crazy to build weapons. You got the easy money is flowing in Japan with Sanae Takaichi calling for her snap elections. And you got President Trump targeting the Fed and Fannie and Freddie. You're buying mortgage-backed securities. The easy money is flowing everywhere. Oh, hey, gold is $4,600 an ounce. Silver's, what, $85 right now? Who's watching? It could be up $5 since I started talking. It's exhausting, guys. The money printers are being spun back up, and the precious metals can see it. We also got earnings from JP Morgan this morning. It was an earnings beat. Most of their business segments looking pretty good. Net interest income is up. One business segment didn't do well at JPM. Investment banking. This is kind of interesting. A 2% decline in investment banking revenue when the market was expecting a 19% increase. Okay, it wasn't enough to derail JPM's entire quarter, but it is a gray lining to a very silver cloud there. And I can't help but wonder, is that Jamie Dimon's cockroaches maybe? That we'd see this sudden decline in investment banking? Is JP Morgan suddenly clamming up and unwilling to lend to private credit perhaps? Or maybe this has something to do with data centers? Or maybe just the overall state of liquidity? I don't know. But there's something worth noting in those JPM earnings. We'll take a look at that. Apple and Google have cut a deal to put Gemini's AI on Siri. That's a big loss for OpenAI. OpenAI previously had the deal for Siri where ChatGPT would help answer questions. Siri remains just awful. It just doesn't really work very well. But hey, maybe Google Gemini will have more luck. Google continues to outperform in the AI space. They had their big chip deal earlier this year with the TPUs. That's taking business away from NVIDIA. Now they're taking business away from OpenAI. And they're also taking business away from the Chinese. There's another story about Google. They're going to manufacture their Pixel smartphones in Vietnam instead of China. Companies continue to pull their production out of that country. We've got Delta earnings beat, but revenue missed. Some interesting things in Delta's earnings report. The upper K of the economy doing really well. They're saying we're seeing good growth in our premium seating. Oh, yeah, first-class tickets they're selling. All the uncomfortable schleps back in coach, though, they're not really flying right now because the rest of the economy sucks. Go figure. And last but not least, we got Eric Adams, the former mayor of New York City. He ran a crypto rug pull apparently yesterday. NYC token was supposed to be the next big crypto. Oh, this token's going to be used to finance civic projects in New York. It's going to be so good for everybody. Oh, it's going to be great. New Yorkers are tough. We're strong. We never back down. Nope. Rug pull. Shocker, I know. Thou shalt not buy meme coins, by the way. Repeat that often and loudly, guys, because more often than not, they end up being rug pull. Stick around for the end of the show. You're not going to want to miss that one. Oh, you just got to love it. Hey, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head? Let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. For you new guys, you come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every single day. And that is just some good wake-up juice. Let's see what's going on in stocks. S&P 500 up by 5 points, 0.08%. Big green candle there. That is inflation giving the middle finger, or the Federal Reserve giving the middle finger to savers, because inflation wasn't that high, which means we're all clear to cut rates some more and make inflation worse. And now the market's just kind of bouncing around, finding its happy place here. But the S&P is up a couple of points. The Dow is right behind it, up 3 points here, 0.01%. Again, most of those gains coming after the CPI results. By the way, this one right here, that was JP Morgan's earnings earlier in the day, and then the market started to fade that story. Will we get something similar from CPI? We'll just have to wait and see. The NASDAQ is in the green, though, up 12 points, 0.05%. Again, all those gains coming immediately following CPI. Looking over at the DXY, the dollar is modestly stronger here, about 5 basis points, 98.96. Despite taking a drop initially on that CPI read, you can see we came all the way down here to 98.85. It's now bounced back. The yen is putting some pressure upward on the dollar this morning, even though that inflation print came in a little bit better than expected, or at least not as bad as some feared, clearing the way for more rate cuts. The market is more focused on the yen this morning, it seems. And looking over at the bond market, we have got yields lower on the long end, a little bit higher on the short end. The 30-year yield at 4.832, that's down almost 1 point. The 10-year yield at 4.178, also down almost 1 point. The 2-year is at 3.535, off by a point and change. And the 1 month is up by a fraction of a point, 3.624%. Bonds, once again, going a whole bunch of nowhere this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got more green in metals this morning. Spot gold is up another $20 here, $4,618 for spot gold. That's up 0.45%. February COMEX gold futures at $46.26. That's up $11.50, or about a quarter of a percent. Spot silver, oh my God, look at that number. What the heck happened there? Another $3. I thought it was a quiet day for metals. It ain't. Spot silver, $88.40. Good God, up another 325, 3.8%. March COMEX futures, 88.37, just barely in contango compared to London there for those March futures, up $3.25, 3.8% higher. I like the shiny. Guys, we're going to be talking about $90 silver sometime soon here. Yeah. I thought it was a quiet day. It's only up $3. Quiet day for the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, up about 0.5%. Platinum is up 1.25% here, about $2,400 for platinum. Palladium is the lonely metal in the red this morning, down about $6 or 0.35% for palladium, but still just under $2,000. And crude oil is up 1.6%, almost a dollar higher here, back in the 60s for February WTI futures, $60.29. Maybe a little bit of economic optimism there reflected in the crude prices, or maybe that's just geopolitical uncertainty around the Iranians. I'm not sure, but oil is a little bit more expensive this morning. Looking over at Bitcoin, it's having a good morning here. $91,930 as priced on Coinbase. That's up about another $750 from yesterday. And the main story today is CPI. This is the number that we just got. You can see here in the chart, 2.7% unchanged for the month of December, the same as it was in November, and in line with market expectations. The energy index was up 2.3%. The food index went up 3.1%. So it may come as something of a relief that, you know, the things that the poor people need to buy, spend a disproportionate amount of their income, food and energy, those are still going up roughly more than the Fed's arbitrary 2% target. Are we even talking about the 2% target? Is that even a target anymore? Do we even bother with that? Because we're looking at 2.7% and we're like, oh, this is good. Well, if we're missing our target by 0.7%, it's not good, but the market thinks it's good. So I guess that 2% target isn't really a thing, is it? Meanwhile, the month over month inflation rate, you see we had a big gap there. That's because we didn't have any CPI during the government shutdown, so we had no prior months to compare to. We finally do 0.3% month-over-month inflation for the month of December, unchanged from the last time we had a month-over-month number of 0.3. Looking at core inflation, which strips out food and energy. That came in at 2.6%, unchanged from the November number and down rather sharply from the September number of 3%. And on a month-over-month basis, 0.2% for core inflation. Again, no month-over-month numbers last month, and then that is in line with the September number. Now, there were some interesting things. They called out a few specific sectors in the BLS report this morning. The index for shelter rose 0.4% in December and was the largest factor in the all-items monthly increase. That's your owner's equivalent rent. It's a statistic I have often bashed often and loudly on this channel. We don't need to rehash all of that. But the shelter index, that's a big part of the inflation read here. The food index increased 0.7% over the month, as did the food at home index and the food away from home index. So whether you're eating out or cooking, food got more expensive last month. The index for energy rose 0.3% in December. Piped gas up big. That was a big one. I can't help but wonder, that's got to be data centers. We've had a colder than usual winter. That's probably contributing as well. But natural gas was a big driver there. The index for all items less food and energy rose 0.2%. That's your core number. Indexes increased over the month include recreation, airline fares, medical care, apparel, personal care, and education. Indexes that went down, we've got the indexes for communication, used cars and trucks, and household furnishings and operations were among the major indexes that decreased. Household furnishings, that's obviously tied to the slowdown in the housing market there. Not surprised to see that. So really, guys, the big story with inflation is that there was no big story. That's the main takeaway. Now, what is potentially a very big story this morning is this one in Iran. Iran protests persist as concern grows over the mounting death toll. And guys, again, the internet is blacked out in Iran and there's fake information all over the place. So it's really hard to know what's really happening on the ground there. All we can do is report what we have here. Iranian protests appear to persist in localized pockets overnight as an activist group warned of imminent executions by the state and said the civilian death toll from the unrest could be in the thousands. The Oslo-based Iran Human Rights Group said at least 648 people had died in the protests by Monday, while estimating the toll could be as high as 6,000. The group warned the risk of mass and extrajudicial executions of protesters is extremely serious. In one video that's been verified by the BBC as coming from a mortuary on the outskirts of Tehran, at least 180 bodies can be seen. The U.S.-based human rights activist news agency reported that more than 10,700 people had been detained in connection with protests by Monday and put the death toll at 646. I have seen estimates as high as 12,000, others around 2,000. It's a good bet the final number is going to be somewhere in the middle there. So the fact that the protesters are being killed, this was something of a red line that President Trump said, if you start killing the protesters, we're going to blow up your stuff. And then we got this one late yesterday. Trump vows 25% tariff on countries doing business with Iran. Of course, yeah, there's one big one there. President Trump said he's imposing a 25% tariff on goods from countries doing business with Iran, ratcheting up pressure on the government in Tehran that has been rocked by widespread protests. Trump posted on social media on Monday that the new duty would be effective immediately without providing details about the scope or implementation of the charges. The action has the potential to disrupt major U.S. trading relationships across the globe. Iran's partners include not only neighboring states, but large economies, including India, Turkey, and China. Any countries doing business with the Islamic Republic of Iran will pay a tariff of 25% on any and all business being done with the United States of America. This order is final and conclusive, he said. Something tells me this order is neither final nor conclusive. But hey, chief among them, guys, this is listing Iran's trading partners. One of the biggest trading partners with Iran is China. They do $32.4 billion of business. Our ally, the UAE, is also on the list, as are the Turks and Iraq and the EU. So are we going to put 25% tariffs on all these countries? Sounds like we are. An additional 25% tariff hitting products from Beijing risks upsetting the trade truce Trump negotiated with Chinese President Xi Jinping late last year. China is the world's top buyer of Iranian crude, and the nation's independent refiners were increasing their intake of the oil as of last month. Hanging over the threat is an impending decision by the U.S. Supreme Court on the legality of Trump's global tariffs. If the justices rule against him, it could hamper his ability to quickly impose duties on Iran's partners. The court's next opinion day is Wednesday. So more questions than answers on this one. And we just have to wait and see, do they actually follow through with this? And then if they do follow through with this, what is the retaliation, if any, going to be from those countries? Just got to wait and see. Meanwhile, the Pentagon to invest $1 billion in L3 Harris missile unit. The transition to a wartime economy continues this morning. The U.S. Department of Defense is set to invest in L3 Harris Technologies missile unit with a $1 billion convertible preferred security, tightening the direct links between the U.S. government and a major defense contractor. Calling it a first-of-its-kind proposed partnership, L3 said the move will significantly increase capacity to build solid rocket motors for U.S. missiles. The preferred security would automatically convert into common equity upon the unit's planned IPO in the second half of the year, according to a statement on Tuesday. L3 Harris said it will keep a controlling interest in the missile solutions business. The company shares rose more than 9% in pre-market trading. Investment in rocket motors needed for drones and missiles aims to fill a much-needed gap, said Bloomberg economics analyst Becca Wasser. The shortage of rocket motors and the small number of qualified suppliers is a choke point for ramping up munitions production. U.S. defense efforts called for increased numbers of systems such as the SM-6 and SM-3 Block 2A air defense missiles and advanced strike missiles such as the PrSM. The PrSM, that is the Army's missile. That's the replacement for the ATACMS, which has proven pretty effective in Ukraine. The SM-3 and the SM-6, those are surface-to-air missiles that the Navy uses. The SM-3 is the really expensive interceptor. The SM-6 is also pretty expensive. That can be both an anti-air and an anti-ship missile in a pinch. L3 also makes the SM-2, which is the more common interceptor, the Patriot, the Tomahawk, the THAAD interceptors. So this is, again, the government taking a stake in a defense contractor to try to improve the U.S. defense production capacity, which is a major bottleneck and a huge risk if we do end up in this increasingly inevitable conflict with the Chinese. The administration has threatened to cut out some major contractors if they don't accelerate production and innovation, with President Trump demanding they cap executive pay and stop issuing dividends and buying back their own stock. So that was the stick. The $1 billion is the carrot. L3 stock right now looking pretty good here, up 8.5% ahead of the opening bell. They were up more than 12.5% at one point this morning, trading at $369.55 ahead of the opening bell. Meanwhile, investors scramble as Japan's Takeuchi aims to cement her grip on power. This one breaking overnight. The Takeuchi trade is back on after the Japanese prime minister moved to strengthen her grip on power. Left with nowhere else to run, investors responded by sending Japanese stocks to record highs and selling the yen and government bonds. With her popularity riding high, Sanae Takeuchi conveyed her intention to call a snap election to senior officials in her ruling Liberal Democratic Party, Kyoto News reported. Takeuchi plans to announce a dissolution of the lower house of parliament at the start of the next parliamentary session on January 23rd. The Yomiuri newspaper reported late Friday that Takeuchi may call for a vote on February 8th or 15th, citing unidentified government officials. The ruling bloc currently has a razor-thin majority of 233 seats out of 465. The move is seen as a bid to solidify support for her hawkish political stance and her pro-stimulus policies. Pro-stimulus. All right. Easy money. Well, let's see what's going on as it looks like we could have more easy money flowing in Japan. USD JPY, the number of yen it takes to make one U.S. dollar, is on the rise once again, 158.87. We are back into yen-tervention territory. You can expect the finance ministry to start dumping their dollars to support the yen any minute now, as once again, the yen continues to weaken. And look at this chart, guys. The yen has really had a rough couple of months here, going all the way back to the middle of 2025. And we are currently now right back where we were the last time they intervened, right up here in January of 2025. So a weakening yen. And we've also got borrowing costs in Japan are on the rise. People are dumping Japanese government debt because the currency is weakening, because they expect inflation to come back, and so they're demanding a higher interest rate in order to loan money to the government. This is JP10Y, the 10-year Japanese government bond, 2.166%, an all-time high. All the long bonds in Japan continuing to grind higher since Takaichi took power. And it looks like that is not going to change anytime soon. Easy money worldwide, everybody. Good news, we're all going to be millionaires. Bad news, $1 million won't even buy you a pack of gum. Meanwhile, we got JP Morgan earnings this morning. JPM, investment banking fees drop on underwriting miss. You know, it was a pretty good quarter from JP Morgan, but everybody's wondering what's up with that investment banking miss there. JP Morgan's investment banking fees unexpectedly fell in the fourth quarter, missing the firm's own guidance from just last month. As revenue from both underwriting and advising on mergers declined, the biggest U.S. bank generated $2.35 billion from the business in the last 3 months of 2025, down 5% from a year earlier, according to a statement on Tuesday. The firm said in December that it had expected a percentage gain in the low single digits. Still, JPM said in a presentation accompanying the results that it expected to earn about $103 billion in net interest income this year. That's more than analysts expected. So that part of the business is doing fine. This is the first in a long line of banks that are reporting this week. The U.S. economy remained resilient, CEO Jamie Dimon said in a statement. While labor markets have softened, conditions do not appear to be worsening. Meanwhile, consumers continue to spend and businesses generally remain healthy. Dimon said those conditions could persist for some time. And then again here, the investment banking results were largely driven by a surprise 2% decline in debt underwriting fees. Analysts expected a 19% gain. All right, so a big swing in debt underwriting fees. That's got to be related to Tricolor and First Brands. Those stories broke early in the fourth quarter. Jamie Dimon had his famous cockroaches statement, and it looks like JP Morgan got much more careful about who they're lending money to after that happened, resulting in a big decline in those debt underwriting fees. So we'll see what comes out of this one. But for now, JP Morgan stock pretty much unchanged here. The opening bell's about to ring. So let's get a refresher here, make sure we have accurate. Up 23 cents, 0.07%. Pretty much no news here, 324.43 for JP Morgan. Meanwhile, we've got big AI news between Apple and Google, and this is not good for Sam Altman. Apple and Google strike Gemini deal for revamped Siri in a major win for Alphabet. Remember when OpenAI was going to put ChatGPT in Siri and everybody's like, oh, Apple Intelligence is going to be great? Well, it wasn't that great. So now it's going to be Google. Apple will use Google's Gemini models for its revamped Siri coming later this year under a multi-year deal that deepens the tech giant's alliance with the artificial intelligence era and bolsters Alphabet's position in the race against OpenAI. The deal announced Monday marks a major vote of confidence for Google. Its technology already drives much of Samsung's Galaxy AI, but the Siri deal unlocks a large market with Apple's installed base of more than 2 billion active devices. After careful evaluation, Apple determined Google's AI technology provides the most capable foundation for Apple Foundation models, Google said, adding that its models will also power other future Apple intelligence features. Alphabet has been jostling with OpenAI for the Apple deal, the financial details of which were not disclosed. The iPhone maker had, in late 2024, rolled out ChatGPT into its devices, allowing the company's Siri voice assistant to tap into the chatbot's expertise to answer complicated questions. That was not particularly well received by the market. Now, I guess OpenAI is out of there. Google is in. Not good for Sam. Very good for Google. You know, Google was viewed as a loser in the AI race for a while there. In the last couple of months, between their TPU, the new chips that came out, and now this one, Google has made some serious inroads in the AI space. Now they're kind of emerging as a leader in the space, and OpenAI, the first mover, they're fighting for their life, trying to stay alive. And we've got more Google news here. This is more trade-related. Google to develop and manufacture the Pixel smartphones in Vietnam, according to this report in Reuters. Google will begin new product introductions for its Pixel, Pixel Pro, and Pixel Fold phones in Vietnam, with development of the lower-end Pixel A series remaining in China for now, the report said. So that pretty much sums up the whole article there, right? The two of these three new phones are going to be made in Vietnam, whereas the prior generation, they were all made in China. This is U.S. companies hedging their bets, slowly moving their production out of China, because of trade tensions, because of tariffs, and of because of the inevitability of what I hope I'm wrong about in 2027. And last but not least, well, no, not last, we've got Delta Airlines shares drop as revenue misses estimates despite a profit beat. Delta Airlines reported fourth quarter adjusted earnings that slightly exceeded analyst estimates, but shares fell 3.3% after the airline's revenue missed estimates and investors reacted to mixed guidance for 2026. The airline posted adjusted earnings per share of $1.55 for the December quarter, beating the analyst consensus of $1.52. However, revenue came in at $14.61 billion, falling short of the $14.72 billion that analysts had expected. The company noted the December quarter revenue growth was impacted by about 2 percentage points from the government shutdown, primarily affecting domestic travel. Delta's quarterly revenue grew 1.2% year over year on 1.3% capacity growth, a little bit of margin compression there, while full year 2025 revenue reached a record $58.3 billion, up 2.3% from 2024. The airline's diverse revenue streams, including premium services, cargo, and maintenance operations, grew by 7% year over year and represented 60% of total revenue. There was another article in Bloomberg that drew a lot of attention to the upper K, that Delta's premium seating was selling very well. They're more economy, what's the word? The cheap seats are not selling very well. The premium stuff is the first class passengers. The upper K, the bifurcated economy, call it what you will. The wealthy are doing really well. They're flying more. Everybody else, not so much. And one other very important detail here, the company provided full-year EPS guidance of $6.50 to $7.50, representing 20% growth at the midpoint compared to 2025, but slightly below analysts' consensus of $7.32. So the guidance was good, but not as good as the market was expecting. And the airline also announced an agreement with Boeing to purchase 30 787-10 wide-body planes with options for an additional 30 with delivery scheduled to begin in 2031. I've seen a couple of articles in the last few days about Boeing, about that ship may be turning around over there. So this announcement on top of some of those stories, keep an eye on Boeing. Maybe the worst is behind us for that company. It's hard to imagine the worst not being behind us because if you remember last year, the worst was pretty bad. Hopefully the end of that one. But Delta Airlines right now, that stock, oh, look at that. They were down about 3.9% pre-market. And now people are buying at the opening bell. It's still down. Nope, there it is. It just went green. $71.10 for Delta Airlines, recovering from a nearly 4% drop earlier this morning. And last but not least, former Bitcoin mayor Eric Adams faces $3 million rug pull allegation after issuing NYC token. Are people really still buying these meme coins? I mean, guys, look where we are in the halving cycle. Crypto winter is here. Now is not the time to be buying an ICO. And yet here we are. On-chain data revealed that a wallet linked to the token's developer removed $2.5 million in liquidity, prompting accusations of a possible rug pull. There's former New York City Mayor Eric Adams. Former NYC Mayor Eric Adams is facing scrutiny from crypto traders after a meme coin he promoted appeared to suffer a sharp liquidity withdrawal shortly after launch. That puts him up there with Donald, Melania, Hawktua, Martin Shkreli, now Eric Adams. During his time as mayor, Adams was a frequent promoter of cryptocurrency, consistently reiterating his desire to make New York the crypto capital of the world, taking his first three paychecks in Bitcoin via Coinbase, leading to crypto advocates calling Adams the Bitcoin mayor for his support of the space. Adams unveiled the NYC token at a Times Square press event on Monday, pitching it as a crypto project tied to civic causes. They're always such philanthropists, aren't they, these crypto guys? The token zoomed to a $580 million market cap shortly after going live, indicating massive demand from retail traders and market watchers. And then look what happens. Oh, stop me if you've heard this one before. Within hours, on-chain data showed large liquidity movements that raised questions about how the token was structured and managed. Analysts shared by Bubble Maps and other researchers showed that a wallet linked to the token's deployer removed roughly $2.5 million in USDC liquidity near the market's peak. About $1.5 million was later added back after the token's price had already fallen more than 60%. Roughly $900,000 in USDC was not returned, according to on-chain tracking. Guys, we've seen this before. Did you really think this time was different? I mean, celebrity tokens are garbage. I don't care who the celebrity is. Maybe it's a celebrity you like. Maybe it's a guy you voted for. Maybe it's somebody whose poster is hanging on your wall. The meme coin associated with it is still garbage. Right? It happens this way every single time. Thou shalt not buy meme coins. Well, there it is. Eric Adams. You can add him to the list. Gotta love it. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much. Where are you? Where are you guys hiding? There he is, Gordon Guamu. Thank you, Gordon. Says silver goes up, but what about groceries next week? Well, food away from home or food at home did increase. Let's see. I'll get you the official number, Gordon. Food at home went up 0.7% in the month of December, 2.4% year over year. So right now, the gains in the shiny are vastly outperforming the gains in food. But I see your point here. Are we watching the metals get more valuable, or are we watching the dollar become worthless? A little bit of both, but for now, metals are becoming more valuable. $88 silver. Can you freaking believe it? What is it? I blinked. Did we miss it? Okay, we're still hovering around 88. So at least it hasn't gone to 89 in the few seconds since I last looked at the price. But yeah, what metals are forecasting the next round of inflation. It's kind of the point you're making here, and I agree with that, you know. Thank you very much, Gordon. Appreciate the support of the channel. Armando Reyes says, how close are we to a crack-up boom? We're still pretty far away from that, Armando. I mean, at the end of the day, the rest of the world still needs our currency. Everybody, if you want to buy anything in this world, if you want to feed your population, if you want to keep the lights on, you got to buy natural gas, oil, grain. You need to do it in dollars. And so we're a long way from the dollar crack-up boom. We'll see it in other currencies first. If other countries try to print their own currency in order to get enough dollars to buy the food and energy they need, then we could see crack-up booms in those countries. Remember the food riots in 2022? A lot similar to that. What we're seeing in Iran, if you will. I do think we're still, at least in the United States, a long, long way from a crack-up boom. I wouldn't rule it out because stupidity reigns supreme in this world right now. But at this point, guys, it looks like they're spinning up the money printers and lowering interest rates and buying defense companies. We can tell how they're going to pay for this conflict that's coming, right? They're going to pay for it with printed money. That's why I keep saying there's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel. Armando also says, I heard that states are finally starting to report that they are in a recession. Depression, come on down. The price is right. Yeah, we've been in a recession since 2022. Take out government deficit spending and this ridiculous incineration of capital and AI data centers, and we've been in a deep recession this whole time. Maybe, just maybe, we're finally going to admit that to ourselves. But, you know, look, buying of mortgage bonds, this pressure on the Federal Reserve to cut rates, even though inflation's still well above the 2% target, they're going to try to paper it over once again. So, you know, all the things that got us here, All the bullshittery of the last couple of years, if anything, it's just gotten worse in the last year. So, you know, they'll probably try to define their way out of this one too. Although the press won't be lining up to support that like they did last time. Thank you, Armando. Once again, Nashville Pasta Man says, showing, remember when 80 seemed unobtainable? I do. Party on, Garth, by the way. Yes, I do remember when 80 seemed like the stuff of fiction. I remember when 60, 70 seemed like the stuff of fiction. I remember dreaming about the inevitable return to 50, that 2011, 1980, the 50-year cup and handle. Here we are at 80. We're already talking about 90 with a twinkle in our eye towards 100. Where it stops, nobody knows. But yeah, I share the sentiment, and I like the shiny. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Joel Z, or Joel's. Thank you, Joel. I'm not even going to try to pronounce all that because I will butcher it, Joel. He says, do you know anything about the new sliding scale silver margin requirement the COMEX is supposedly implementing? No, I know nothing about that. This is the first I heard of it. Just be careful. I don't know the source of this information. Verify everything you're told, guys. There's a lot of BS flying out there. I don't know if this is BS or not, Joel. It's the first I've heard of it. I would say the best source of information, anything like this, is going to be Bob Coleman at Profits Plus ID on Twitter. Bob is a realist. He doesn't get down with the alarmist rhetoric. And he lives in this space. So I'll run that question by Bob and see what he says. But this is the first I've heard of it, a sliding scale for silver margin requirements. Anytime I hear sliding scale, I want to say like, oh, our buddies can go ahead and go out on margin, but all you plebs, you guys are going to get liquidated. But that's just my initial take on that. But have not heard about any changes to margin yet. Not since, was it last week or 2 weeks ago when they changed it twice? That was the last time I heard about margin changes. Thanks again, Joel, for supporting the channel. 4P says, great community you created here. I infer that you put 27 hours a day of work into this channel. Thanks, Jack. Not quite 27, but yeah, we put the hours in here, but I don't call it work. I love what I do, Mr. Four P's, Mr. Pooh. I love what I do. I haven't worked a day since I started doing this full time. That being said, I put the hours in. Yes, sir. I stare at charts and read articles till my eyeballs bleed every single day. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man says, nobody claimed the collapse of Western civilization if NVIDIA went up 2,700%. Bitcoin to 150K, $300 silver, it won't change anything. CNBC won't talk about it. Yeah, you know, I saw a post from Peter Schiff yesterday, Pasta Man. Thank you for supporting the channel, by the way. Peter Schiff calling out CNBC for saying nothing about metals yesterday. He mentioned that Sarah Eisen had at one point mentioned silver was up a little bit yesterday when it was actually up like 5% in a day, breaking 86, now over 88. But, you know, there's a good point here, Pasta, that you're making. And I think context is important. We're all looking at $88 silver saying, how high could it possibly go? And, you know, that's a healthy skepticism. Hold on to that because, you know, we've gone from 20 to 80. We've quadrupled. But view that in the context of what Bitcoin has done. View that in the context of what NVIDIA has done. NVIDIA has run up in a straight line for 3.5 years now, or right since September of, we'll say since November of 2022. So for about 3 years now, NVIDIA has gone up in a straight line. It could be early in this silver rally, or the top could be around the corner. Just be careful, guys. Nobody freaking knows is the one thing that I would say. Be careful on leverage. Take profits when you can. I've got these SLV calls. I don't know what the hell to do with. I mean, I'm tempted to just sit there and let them run because they're ripping. Got to take some profits. I'd like to roll them up and out. I'm not going to pay premiums for these to replace them at a higher level. But hey, it's a great problem to have, I guess. So enjoy the good times, guys. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Jolly Lollipop One says, as a U.S. Army cook, thank you for your service, sir. I flipped many pancakes in Germany as I single-handedly defeated the USSR. That's right. We outspent those Ruskies on pancakes. They just couldn't match us. Flapjack for flapjack. Get some. It was a war of pancake attrition, courtesy of Jolly Lollipop. Thank you, sir. But now Russia is a non-commie. Why can't we be friends? We can be friends. We just have to stop invading people and killing people. And look, Russia bad, America good, or America bad, Russia good. All right. I mean, there is... Beware this stupid team sport that's going on. We're all assholes. We all kill people to get what we want. All right? Point, spin the globe, drop your finger somewhere arbitrarily on it, and unless your finger ended up in the middle of the ocean or freaking Antarctica, you landed on a country that kills people to get what it wants. So, like, all this silly whataboutism and everything that goes on, like, oh, but you invaded Iraq. Oh, but you invaded Georgia and Chechnya, and but you did. How about we all just stop freaking killing people? And unfortunately, that is the minority voice. Everything in the world is mobilizing towards global conflict right now, Jolly Lollipop. It is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. I would love the leaders of this world to prove me wrong about that. They won't. That's all I can say about that one. Why can't we be friends? Because we're too busy killing each other. That's why. Armando Reyes says, Melonhead coin. This is crazy. This is crazy. This is crazy. 100 million Melon token to the man who is pointing out not once, not twice, but thrice that this is indeed crazy. Yeah, the NYC coin, you know, in a shocking turn of events, it ended up being just a rug pull, just a get-rich-quick scheme, and not, in fact, the civic projects that were promised at the press release. I know. I'm as shocked as you are to learn these things, Armando. I really am. Note sarcasm, sir. Thank you again for supporting the channel, as well as you, Madison Hypes, 7221. Says, who does Vietnam side with in a U.S. v. China war? I think Vietnam stays out of it if they can. That being said, China's nine-dash line, where they basically said the whole South and East China Sea belong to us now, not going over so well with the Vietnamese. All the things that the Chinese are doing, ramming fishing boats to the Filipinos and the Japanese, they also do it to Vietnam. So I don't think they're exactly friends with the Chinese, but remember that whole thing? There was allegedly a chapter between U.S. and Vietnamese history that didn't go so well. They're not exactly in a hurry to be our friends either. So if I had to guess, I'd say Vietnam just goes shields up, stay out of it. They mobilize their military on their own borders. They get their boats in the water, but they don't get involved in the active fighting. That's just my guess. Also, Vietnam stands to benefit the most from an exodus of manufacturing out of China. Countries like Vietnam, Cambodia, what's the other one? India is a big one. Indonesia all stand to benefit. Malaysia, although there's something of a U.S. ally there. But China has conflicts with every country along its borders. Every single country China borders with, except North Korea, which is their own puppet state. They have some form of conflict, some disputed island chain or economic waters that they're trying to seize. Vietnam is no different. Thank you very much, Madison, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and the subscribe button on the way out, should you feel so inclined. Thank you very much for the generosity in the Super Chats, everybody. Appreciate that very much, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Till next time, everybody. Live small. Dream big.